Welcome to Talking TRM, the Travel Risk Management Podcast. I'm Bex Debman and I'm an independent consultant specialising in ISO 31030. During my transition from corporate travel to travel risk, I met some incredible individuals driving travel risk management forward with passion and expertise. On this podcast, I'm going to chat with them about their stories and hopefully inspire our listeners to start their own travel risk management journey. Hello and welcome to another episode of Talking TRM, the podcast dedicated to travel risk management. My name is Bex Debman, also known as Travel Risk Bex. And today, I'm very pleased to say that my guest is a new friend in this space. So we always start with my friends because that's what this podcast is all about. It's about community building and it's about understanding and listening to each other and giving ourselves space to talk about the diversity of travel risk management. But what makes this so cool, I think, and really exciting, hopefully for our fans and our listeners too, is that I met this person because of the podcast. So she's my first guest to come on and actually talk about this, having listened to the podcast to begin with. So that just means for me that we are trying to reach the community, we are doing a good thing. And I thank you to everyone that's listening for spreading the word, because it's really, really good. So without further ado, I would like to hand over to our guest today and ask you, who are you and what do you do?
Well, thank you very much, Bex. That's a wonderful intro. And I'm very honored to be the first kind of podcast fan guest, I suppose. My name is Alex Delgado, and I usually present myself or introduce myself as a global risk and crisis management advisor specializing in travel risk and field security with a focus on complex environments. So I'm actually coming into this space from the security, the field security management domain. And I have about 15 years of experience all told within the security and risk space. So I launched my career in DC within the NGO domain, and I was working on issues related to human security and terrorism, illicit trafficking, but mostly kind of civilian protection and conflict. And then that was followed by a brief stint in compliance where I was working on international sanctions. And that kind of brought me to the notion of companies, large global companies, going out into new to them environments, many of which can be very unstable, and trying to do good work, but often coming up against a whole series of issues on the ground that complicate that entire process. And so with the help of all of that experience combined, I was able to move back into the security space, which is where my kind of real passion lay, I guess. And I was very fortunate to be able to support major companies and organizations that are operating in these often unstable, often unpredictable, certainly always eccentric, and so very exciting environments. Seeing as my academic background initially was in international politics and security, but that was really kind of a focus on grand power politics, right? So this notion of national security, of, you know, U.S. foreign policy, transnational security architecture, kind of the big ticket stuff. And after about a decade in D.C., I decided to go for another graduate degree, this time in France, that was really specifically focused on risk and crisis management across a whole host of domains, to which I had not previously been exposed very much at all, certainly not in any academic setting. And so that gave me the chance to look at health-related emergencies just before the pandemic, actually. Issues, so everything from public health to volcanic eruptions to managing tsunami risks and understanding, you know, how major floods can impact specific areas for years and years to come. A lot of it was focused on kind of the natural disasters, so closer to the ground type topics. And that then I felt like really helped me establish, I guess, more, well, certainly exposed me to a lot more knowledge and expertise out there on these topics that then really supported my kind of further development within the travel risk space. So I guess if I may just give one tip, one point of recommendation that I always highlight in this context, for experienced professionals in particular, if you have the option of going back mid-career to do another degree or another certificate program, or just some kind of academic initiative where you're exposed to people from all sorts of different backgrounds, I would highly, highly, highly recommend it, because I feel like it really exposed me to just so much more. And I definitely think it made me a much better rounded professional overall within travel risk and field security in particular. So once that was done, once that program in France was completed, I had the opportunity to decide how I wanted to proceed with my career. And one thing that kind of I guess spoiled me or broke me was that I'd had a really, really, really fantastic career background in DC with just the absolute best teams that you could possibly imagine, fantastic management and leadership. So when I left DC, I was really leaving for a new adventure. I wasn't trying to, you know, run away from a stagnant career or anything of the sort. And I quickly realized that it would be really difficult for me to find something like that in this completely new environment. But I was fortunate to see that both my past colleagues, as well as some of the new folks that I'd met on this transatlantic journey, were looking to start or continue working with me, as the case may be. And that's what led me to launch my own consulting firm, specializing in field security and travel risk. So exactly what I wanted to do all along, where my true passion lay. And I've been fortunate to have been able to do that ever since. I weathered the pandemic quite all right and came out of it, I think, with a much greater appreciation for public health emergency management. Certainly, I think as we all did. And that's what I've been doing for the past 4 years now. So
So 4 years. Let's just tell everyone who your company is.
Yes. So my company is called Terrain 9 in English. In French, it's called Terrain Neuf. So it's a bit of a play on words with regards to new terrain. Companies, organizations, but individuals really looking to go out into new terrain and explore new opportunities that are presented in these new spaces. My goal is to support them as best I can with the development of a travel risk and field security management program. So I usually come in either building or helping build a program from the ground up, or helping assess program components and then make recommendations for their enhancement. And that's really kind of my focus. And so within that context, I'm always looking to benchmark what I'm doing and what my clients are doing against the experience of others. But with the development of the ISO 31030 guidance for organizations, and the expansion of the space of travel risk in particular, not as a subset of corporate travel management or security management, but as kind of its own standalone domain. Within that context, I've been very lucky to meet some great people, and that's how I found you. So
I like that bit right at the end. Thank you. There's quite a lot to kind of go back over there, but there's a couple of things that I really want to pick up on. And I think, thank you for your absolute honesty in this space. I think there's a lot of There's sometimes a bit of worry about what we do know and what we don't know. And I think what's really important is travel risk management is pretty massive if we take it to its expanse, as opposed to perhaps the viewpoint that some of us have when we're just stuck in a particular sector, which reading between the lines is kind of what happened to you when you then had this second, when you did this second piece of studying in France. Exactly. Because suddenly you were looking at stuff that you hadn't considered before. And that's kind of what we're trying to do in this space, is to say it's not travel and it's not security, it's travel risk together. And it covers a huge amount of things. And actually, exactly. I've spoken to so many security side people who get really frustrated with the travel industry, quite frankly, and I get it, because they don't know how the travel industry works. They have an idea of how the travel industry works, which is how the travel industry projects itself, but the travel industry does not work like that. Right. So there's this kind of smoke and mirrors thing going on. And honestly, from the travel industry side, there's a lot of learning to happen in this space. And I'm quite open about that. It's why I do what I do, because I've worked that side and I'm like, how on earth are companies going to rely on with 31030 if they can't rely on the service providers to know their bit of the puzzle and where they're responsible, right? And all that kind of stuff. So it was really nice listening to you, because it felt like a lot of mirroring of my journey when I moved across from travel into this space as well. But this feels like a new space, and this feels like something exciting that we can all do together. Thanks to 31030 as a sort of benchmark, but also everything that's going to come after that as well. So what I guess I'm trying to establish is, from your perspective, when you had that wider moment where you took the apertures off, which is something Bruce talks about a lot, what happened? What talk me through that kind of, like, what was the, because obviously you had a way of it happening, you had a viewpoint of the stuff that you were doing, and then suddenly there was all this other stuff. So can you talk us through that?
Sure. So that's actually a really interesting question. Thank you very much for that, because I think it really kind of gets the neuron links flowing, right? But I think that the key issue that it really brought to the fore for me, or highlighted, was the importance of detail. Just so many little details that make up this entire space, right? From including things that in many cases we never really considered with my clients or with my past employers, or just generally in my professional engagements and practice. For example, the notion of security dilemmas and how efforts to secure a particular operation can actually cause or create additional security risks that may make that operation less safe. But also things like the importance of what's actually happening on the ground, the importance of topography, right? So we don't really spend, for example, in certainly in academic programs related to international affairs, I feel like we don't spend enough time on the actual, what does the surface of the earth look like where you're planning to operate, right? And that's actually a key thing. I mean, it's so important to understand what the road looks like ahead, right? What kind of river this is, how tall the mountain is that you're needing to cross. Also the importance of human behavior in this whole context. And I think especially if you spend a lot of time working for kind of more or less the same format of company or organization, you get used to people who themselves have spent most of their career usually working in that same format, and they've all kind of become formatted in that exact same way. And then you're exposed to people who are coming from completely different industries, right? And they not only approach their work differently, but they also approach their travel differently. And that can be both a very good thing from a risk management perspective, but that can also cause additional issues and concerns. And if there's, I guess, one major takeaway, and this was kind of in my golden nugget list, but more as a a piece of advice for people just starting out and kind of looking to build knowledge and experience in this domain, but the importance of going out and talking to people and listening. So I am by nature, I think, more of kind of an introvert in the sense that I don't really love spending my entire day talking to absolutely everybody, but I've discovered that it is so incredibly valuable, specifically in the travel risk management space, whether you're building a program or you're trying to assess what the most problematic points may be, or whatever the point of that specific engagement, just going out and having really in-depth conversations, asking people to think about risks and concerns and issues that only they could have seen, because we simply don't see what they see. We don't live those same experiences. We don't travel the same way. We don't work the same way. We don't have their jobs. So we don't know what it's like in their day-to-day. I think that that's really something that certainly the entire security management space can always benefit from. But with travel in particular, it's the environment in which you are conducting this travel is just changes so frequently and often so rapidly that it's impossible for one person, no matter how many years of experience they have in this domain, to really be able to capture the entire universe of risk, to really be able to scan through it. And for me, the best way to kind of get a handle on as many possible nightmare scenarios, as many things that could possibly go wrong and that I would want to control for, that I would want to try to mitigate and prepare a team for ahead of time, the best way to really understand what all of those may be is going to be going out and talking to people and really taking note of the teeny tiny details, understanding their psychology, understanding who they are and where they're coming from. And I feel like the ISO 3130 actually guidance frameworks really do a pretty good job of taking that into account in a way that prior benchmarking or industry standardization materials hadn't really. So I definitely appreciate that.
Thank you. I know we call it the people standard between us because it's one of those, don't get me wrong, standards are always there to protect people and ultimately products and other bits and pieces as well. But there's always that underlying, as much as companies don't always see it like that. But that is the kind of thing behind it. But this one was different, wasn't it? This one was easier to read. But I think maybe because most of us have some sort of understanding of travel, whether we do it for business or whether we just do it in our personal lives, and we don't even have to do international travel to have some experience of what that is. And what it did is it sort of said it doesn't matter what you're doing, we're not going to talk about just crisis, we're going to talk about this from a people perspective.
Yeah,
and that it really made it really real for me, which is why I, you know, one of the reasons I love it, because from the travel side, we've been talking about people for a long time. We've been talking about personalization for a long time, but predominantly that comes from commercial opportunities as opposed to a way of really looking after people. So it felt like it was a bit, I guess, the TRM equivalent of greenwashing, whatever that is. People wash, no, not people washing. We're going to come up with something better. But it used to frustrate me because we sort of were selling something and getting people to think it was one thing, but the reality was it was so far from that. And when stuff happened, it was pretty much those individuals on their own having to deal with it or having some sort of understanding. And that's not how these things should be working at all. You know, we need to, I think we've been around long enough, even in my lifetime, to have seen the stuff that we've seen. And I think we know that things aren't going to get any easier over the next sort of 10 to 50 years. They're only going to get potentially more difficult. So these things are going to continue to happen. So it feels like there's no excuse now not to plan for this stuff. And I think what 3130 has done is put that line in the sand and said, yes, and here it is. Here's some guidance around that, because you really need to be doing this now, which is really, really great for all of us.
Not sure where to start with implementing a standard such as ISO 31030? A gap analysis exercise from Ascent Risk Management is the best place to start. Our expert consultants will take you step by step through your chosen standard and highlight any weak areas. This can be conducted remotely, and the results of the gap analysis can form the plan for your targeted project. Contact Ascent today at www.ascent1, which is ASSENT1.com, and book in your gap analysis today.
So I think you've been so honest throughout all of this, but I just want to understand, and I think just hearing the passion in your voice explains to all of our listeners why. But is there anything else you want to add to your why before we get on to your golden nuggets? Even though we've kind of done one, we might get another couple in. I mix it around a bit on this. But there is, what's driving you to do this every day?
So I think what's driving me to do this every day is, I can honestly say I can't really see myself doing anything else. It's not as though I'm stuck, but rather I'm just genuinely excited to start work every morning. But I looking back on it, it was kind of hard to pinpoint, but the one incident that when I was much, much younger, the one incident that really sticks out in my mind is this may be a bit random, but the August 2003 bombing of the UN headquarters in Iraq that took the lives of a very large number of UN staff, including the special representative of the Secretary General, a gentleman by the name of Sergio Vieira de Mello. I would highly recommend Ambassador Samantha Power's book on him called Chasing the Flame. And it's a really, really excellent look at kind of him, his story, but overall the push of the international community to try to resolve some of these major, major challenges with regards to civilian protection in conflict specifically. And I was... I think a rising sophomore in college, I was very sort of idealistic, and I thought, you know, that would be a great guy to go work for. I could totally see myself being, you know, his whatever junior assistant in the High Commissariat for Human Rights. Now, what really shocked me, you know, beyond the loss of so many great people, was I had thought that an organization such as the UN would have had all of this figured out, right? How could you not? Especially in Baghdad in 2003, it was, and it shocked me that that had not been the case. And then in the aftermath of the attack, and there were a number of internal investigations, some of them controversial kind of for a variety of reasons, but there was this idea that I had of kind of the all-powerful international organizations that can really handle anything. You know, if they can save hundreds of thousands of refugees, then they can certainly deal with securing their own headquarters in a place such as Iraq. And I quickly realized that was not the case. And that really inspired me to look more into the support structures behind these projects. Right. And what I came to realize, whether within the NGO space, the international organization space, but also within the entirely private sector space, is you've got these fantastic experts, whether focused on a particular function or a sector or field of knowledge, who go out and do really important, meaningful work that moves all of us forward, whether it's purely humanitarian or whether there's some kind of, you know, a profit motive behind it, but still. And none of that gets done without support behind them. And those support structures are often overlooked. but they're really the key to making sure that these missions are successful. And that then kind of brought me to the field security travel risk industry. And within the field security space in particular, it wasn't just about securing static operational sites or, you know, static office buildings, static project sites out there in the field. But it was about how do we get people to and from there safely? How do we make sure that their day missions or overnight missions or 2 week long missions into whatever complex environment they're going into? How do we make sure that they have all of the support that they need to come back from there safe and sound, having achieved all of their goals and objectives? And that's really my why. I mean, I am constantly in awe of the amazing people that we're able to support with my partners and colleagues. The fact that they are out there, you know, building new educational institutions, ensuring that people in very remote areas have fantastic water and sanitation infrastructure, but also people, you know, expanding new private enterprise initiatives in, bringing jobs and healthcare and, you know, economic empowerment opportunities to areas that really need them, developing local economies, supporting, micro entrepreneurs. All of that can't be done without a security support structure behind it and without people going out to do that work safely. And so that's where travel risk comes in. And I think for too long, it was kind of overlooked or rolled into perhaps a subservice of the corporate travel people, right? Or like, oh, corporate travel will handle that, or the travel people will handle that. Or else, in certain cases, and I think this was especially the case for a lot of US-based operations in the, you know, with the start of the global war on terror, there was this notion that everything had to be militarized, right? That if you were going out, then you needed to be supported by a rapid reaction force. And that really doesn't match the way that people work. And it also doesn't really help people do that work safely, and oftentimes can also, create more problems than it solves. So those are some of the things that I'm kind of trying to work through and around and resolve in what I do every day.
You really went there then. Thank you. But that's so good. Like that I'm so enjoying this conversation. And I just think it's so nice to hear it from, it's like I said, there's so many things that you're echoing in my way of thinking with this stuff as well. And it's this framework, it's this infrastructure. Things just don't just happen. We have to put things in place to make them happen, to allow people to go and do the things that we do. And I think you're so right. For so long, travel, and this is part of the problem with it, travel has been seen as a add-on to be doing something else that you need to do. It's not part of the strategy. It's just an annoying thing that you have to book. It's expensive. Oh, and then it sits in procurement for the most part. So it's suddenly a cost to control and a cost to manage. These two things don't work together.
Yeah.
And if you come too far on the security side, and I think you're so spot on with that, I had a really good chat with a previous podcast guest, Jim, and he sort of said, you know, we'd go in and we'd make sure that these hotels were secure. But the corporate traveler never wanted to spend any time in that hotel because it didn't have a pool, it didn't have a gym, and it didn't have this. And I'm like, there's a balance, because most situations aren't hostile. Most situations we're throwing people into aren't hostile. It's the everyday stuff, and then getting them prepared for when stuff does happen. And the other thing I really just wanted to touch on, someone said this to me the other day, and I just think it's exactly what you're talking about. This idea of emerging markets and how we talk about emerging markets. What we really mean is high-risk countries and destinations, don't we, for the most part. So we sort of have this idea, oh, emerging markets, that sounds interesting and exciting, which it is. But actually, they're going to areas that perhaps business hasn't been done so much, and people are trying to become some of the first companies out there or the first infrastructures out there. So a lot of what you're doing is enabling business to go and do that safely, as opposed to just kind of going, we've got to be the first out there, let's not think about it, off we go. And I've had some frightening conversations with people, you know, going to sort of Central Africa or going to other countries that they just weren't prepared for in any way. And I haven't spoken to the traveler necessarily, I have, but I've also spoken to the companies that sent them out there. And I just kind of give them this look and I went, sorry, you sent them where? And told them just to book a flight and crack on? Right?
Right.
So it's scary. Which is why I think this work's so important. Now, I warned you this was going to go really quickly, and it has. So
it has.
You've given us one golden nugget, but I'm just conscious we've had such a great conversation. I want to, is there anything else that you kind of want to add to our listeners in this moment as our first fan? Come on, others, you can do it too. that you want to give out to our listeners before we finish today?
So I think, thanks for the fantastic questions. I think we were able to touch on kind of a lot of the bullet points that I had prepared, mostly just the importance of talking to people, of getting involved. I think the space is certainly large enough and the need is great enough for all of us to find our niche or to find our piece of the pie to work on. And going off of what you just said, actually, absolutely, with regards to emerging markets, I think that that's a very important piece. But it's not just about, if companies don't pay attention to these issues, it's not just that they risk losing money or that they risk losing people, which is terrifying in its own right, but they, even if everything goes, you know, more or less smoothly and there are no significant risks or issues that their travelers encounter, the fact that companies go into these markets unprepared can often exacerbate many of those same issues that have caused the environment to be unstable in the first place, those endemic security risk field issues. Now, a better way to do it would be to, and I'm a big fan of kind of pushing for, you know, responsible business to only be entering the market when you're fully prepared to do so, and with a serious focus on ensuring that you're bringing good to the community and that you are doing good in that community. And that also passes through the travel risk management and field security management space. So I guess just a focus on doing good can take us a really long way. Yes, for the longest time, both travel and security have really been seen as kind of an additional cost, something heavy that companies have to bear. But if we flip it and look at it from the perspective of it being an investment in the opportunities presented by whatever project or mission or humanitarian initiative or new subsidiary or joint venture you may be seeking in that space, I think that that works out the best for everyone, certainly for the local community, but notably for the company or the organization coming into the space, as well as everyone working for them. And I think that, yes, it's important to view this as a duty of care issue, but at the same time, it really kind of goes beyond that. It's about, yeah, just all of us coming together to try to make the world a better place, including a better place to work in, a better place to build new things within. Or I guess, yeah.
Oh my goodness, I'm literally there going, I love you. But I do, because this is it, right? You know, I so agree with you. Companies kind of need to be having a good look at what they are doing. And this brings the sustainability argument straight back into it. We should never be far away. It's a massive part of travel risk, full stop, and on lots of different levels. And really addressing why we're doing it. You know, why are we traveling and for what purpose? And if we, or actually, why is our company, this is hard, why are our companies existing and to what purpose? Because we do a lot of clever marketing with why our companies exist and what we do, but something that happens again and again is actually, what is the purpose of that company? And as we move into this new world, this shouldn't be a scattergun approach anymore. If we're going to go and work in a new market, we should have a really, really good reason as to why we're doing it. And I think you're right, it'd be adequately prepared. And I think that's the only way it can happen. And that's what the beauty of these frameworks is all about, because it's giving you the structure to be able to do that. Not to tell you what to do. You decide, you do your own risks and you decide your own mitigation against them, but have a framework. So at least you're looking at 360 as opposed to this kind of crazy look. And I've heard some crazy stuff about business trips being, you know, up to 80% of business travels not having an ROI on them. So they can't actually even, I'd argue that 90% of business trips don't have an ROI on them, to be fair, if not more, but they can't prove that it was valid. And that's where we need to kind of get to. Right. Thank you so much. Go on. She's got something else to add.
Yes. Sorry. I love it. This thing just reminded me of one last point that I wanted to make. And this especially, I think, comes to the fore when you come in and you're evaluating an existing travel risk management program or initiative. The notion of, we are often used to thinking, as you said, of you know, emerging markets as high risk destinations. And so we'll have this notion in our minds that, you know, a certain country, because there's been a history of conflict, because there's been, you know, economic stagnation, civil unrest, and so on, that country is by default going to present more travel risk than another country that is generally considered very stable, that perhaps has a much better developed tourism industry or something of the sort. And one thing that I've really, really had to learn on this journey is that's not really often the case, especially with an existing program. Oftentimes, especially with a program that I guess is quite strong already in its own right and on its own merits. Oftentimes the biggest risk is presented by the environments that don't have a travel risk management structure, program, effort, initiative already in place. So we're used to thinking of, you know, countries in conflict as being particularly risky, and of course they are. But if you already have a fantastic security team on the ground that's, you know, there to take the traveler from passport control at the airport all the way to their hotel and make sure that they're tucked in safely at night every step of the way, that environment will often be less risky than, I mean, we've had folks, you know, going out on fishing boats off of various tropical islands that are absolute paradises with, you know, villas going for $500 a night. But if you're out there on a fishing boat and that fishing boat capsizes and you don't have a life jacket, you are at much greater risk than your colleague that happened to go to a country at war, but who's, you know, who never leaves the hotel without
with a bodyguard,
without close protection, and only ever travels in armored vehicles. So those kinds of details, right? Ensuring that you understand how people travel, what decisions they might make when they haven't been given clear guidance, and what risks could be inherent in those decisions, and then everything that flows from them. Really trying to understand their trip every step of the way, and perhaps setting aside the stereotypical notion of, you know, how you imagine a country to be, but really focusing on what is the experience of this specific kind of traveler in an environment such as this. That, I think, gives us much more valuable detail to really be able to enhance a program and enhance that traveler's experience within their overall mission. So with that, I'll pass the mic.
It's absolutely fine. Like, this is exactly the stuff that we want to be hearing from you and exactly the thing that we want to talk about. And I think you're so, so right. We have a motto now at the TRA: every trip, every person, every time. And it's about understanding not just the location, but the effect of that person, where they're at in that moment, not where they were 3 months ago, where they're at right now, with all of the other stuff that's going on, and actually then what they're going to be doing out there as well. Because you could send a really experienced person to Paris who's done it a million times before, or you could send your 18-year-old intern to Paris who's never traveled. That's a very different risk criteria happening just in that one trip. So essential. And I've always been concerned that I went into the detail too much in my travel service, in my programs that I put together, because I can literally sometimes see my clients going, oh wow, we hadn't thought about this. But then once it's done and it's been thought about, it's done, right? We know what to do. We've got some sort of thing around it, so it's sorted. But I don't feel like that now. The fact you've said the detail, I'm so happy. So thank you. Because I go into detail. Look, I don't want this to come to a close because it's been amazing, but I am going to have to. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you
so much for doing what you do. And thank you so much for being willing to talk about it in such a articulate way. So it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for me as well.
No, you're very, very welcome. And there will be lots of other things that we're doing together. So thank you to our listeners. You have been listening to Talking TRM with Bex Debman, also known as Travel Risk Bex. This is the podcast dedicated to travel risk management. Thank you so much, Alex. We wish everybody a good couple of weeks and we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. In the meantime, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Talking TRM is in association with Ascent Risk Management. If you enjoyed listening to today's podcast, please subscribe and make sure to leave a review. If you need any help with implementing an ISO standard, such as ISO 31 or 30, or if you have any questions regarding ISO, please reach out to Ascent Risk Management to talk to one of our expert consultants today. We can be found at www.ascent1.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, and links can be found in the show description. This podcast is a Clemark Studio production and was produced by Jessica Ingalls.